It's again a great blessing and privilege to be here this evening, and again ask you to pray for us for the time we stand before you. In the next few days, if nothing improves, I do plan on calling Brother Will and telling him thanks a lot, because he claims that whatever he had wasn't contagious, but whatever he had, he gave it to me, and my voice is awful froggy. I do ask you to pray that it would hold up this evening. There was a theme this weekend to the course of the services that I'd like to try to, Lord being our helper, tie together. And the themes were the standing that we have in God and our response to it, and how that is shown through our efforts in the kingdom. And the messages from Thursday night all the way till this morning reflected that, and some of the messages were heavier on God's power and what He's done for us, and some leaned a little more towards the response that we should have as a result of it. But both of them were prominently seen. I'd like to direct your attention this evening to 1 Corinthians chapter 4. I'm going to begin by doing an extended reading. There's only a couple verses that we really want, but to get the setting of this, begin in 1 Corinthians 4, verse 1. The Apostle Paul writes, he says, "Let a man so account of us as of the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you, or of man's judgment. Yea, I judge not mine own self. For I know nothing by myself, yet am I not hereby justified, but he that judgeth me is the Lord. Therefore, judge nothing before the time, until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness, and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts, and then shall every man have praise of God. And these things, brethren, I have in a figure transferred to myself and to Apollos for your sakes, that ye might learn in us not to think of men above that which is written, that no one of you should be puffed up one against another. For who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? Now ye are full, now ye are rich, ye have reigned as kings without us, and I would to God ye did reign, that we also might reign with you." The Apostle Paul, in writing this, and I'm not going to dwell on all the verses we read, he's writing to a church that has a multitude of problems. And one of the problems that he's already addressed is the problem that they had, that they were thinking more of the messenger than they were of the message. They were following certain preachers, and they were thinking about this one over that one. And Paul begins this lesson for us to account of ministers, not above that which they are, but as stewards of the mysteries of God. That all Paul is he's one who bears what God has already given, what God has already declared, and it's just his to hold for a little while and keep as God has commanded him to keep it. So whenever you see a minister bring forth the things that we've had this weekend, all he is a steward of the mystery of Christ. He didn't come up with this by himself. He didn't get this because it was his idea. He's holding on to what God has given him to hold on to, and he's declaring it to God's people as he has grace to do it. And notice what Paul says about this. In verse 4, he says, "For I know nothing by myself, yet am I not justified, but he that judgeth me is the Lord." Paul says, anything that I have that is worthwhile, he said, it's not mine that I got all by myself. It was given to me by God. I think a little later in the same epistle in 1 Corinthians 8, about verse 2, the Apostle Paul writes this. He says, "If any man thinketh that he is something when he is nothing, he knoweth nothing as he ought to know." You know, every time a man thinks he's got something figured out, thinks he has something of his own power, he really doesn't know anything as he ought to know. Because anything that I have, it's been given to me by God. Paul says, I don't know anything of myself. I haven't come up with this. God has given this to me. And the lesson that he's teaching, he says, this has been transferred to me. It's been transferred to Apollos. It's been transferred to every other minister of the gospel. And when you hear a man stand and declare the goodness like you have this weekend, it is not a testimony of the greatness of that man. It's a testimony of the greatness of God in pouring out mercy upon His children and having pity upon us to give us light and understanding of the hidden things to walk in light in a cold, dark world. And that's the place that we find ourselves in. And this church has sort of lost some of this. And you say, well, he's talking about himself being a steward. He's talking about himself being one who holds on to these things. Go on down. The verses we want are verses 7 and 8. Paul says this. He says, "For who maketh thee to differ from another?" You know, there is a sense in this world where people in the world want to be different, but they want to be the same. It's a paradox. Because what does the world tell you? They tell you, be your own self. You're unique. Be your own you. But then what do they want? They want you to be like everybody else. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. And friends, I tell you, not like the world will tell you, but I tell you tonight, you are different. But who maketh thee to differ from another? You didn't make yourself different from another. God made you different from this world. God made you different between you and the things of this world. You know, in the book of Exodus, I believe it's in about the 12th chapter, when the Lord is bringing to the full end the plagues upon Egypt. He's gone through the water being turned into blood. He's gone through the frogs and the flies and the lice and the fiery hail. He's gone through all this. It says that God set a distinction. He separated the children of Israel from the Egyptians. In other words, God made a division. He made a difference between Egyptians and Israelites. And though we are all of the race of Adam, though we are all of the sons of this world, yet, friends, God has made us to differ from another. God has made us to differ from this world. And I don't mind so much being different from this world. I don't mind so much being thought upon as strange in this world. Because, friends, if I'm different from this world, it's not me that has made it so. It is God that has made me to differ from this world. Now, I know some people who are different just to be different. They're contrary just to be contrary. That's not what Paul's talking about. You know, Peter says in, I believe it's 1 Peter chapter 1, he says, you're a peculiar people. I know a lot of people that are peculiar, but not in the way that Peter was talking about. We don't need to be weird just to be weird. We don't need to be odd just to be odd. But friends, if we're different from this world, it's God that has made us to differ from another. And what does that difference bring? What does that difference make in our lives? He says, for who maketh thee to differ from another? He says, and what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory as though thou hast not received it? Let's spend some time on these two questions. Paul asks a question. He says, what hast thou that thou didst not receive? In other words, what do you own? What do you possess that was not given to you? See, Paul has already told about himself that he's a steward of the mystery of God. That what he has, he didn't get because of himself. He didn't get by his own strength. It was given to him. And now he's asking them. He says, what do you have that you didn't receive? What do you have that wasn't given unto you? You know, there is a sense in this world which we could say that there are certain things that I have because I got them. And in a certain sense, we see that. I mean, I get up, I go to work, and at the end of 2 weeks, I get a direct deposit and I get a statement that says you have this much money that has been deposited into your bank account. And we could, in a sense, say, I earned that which I just received. But, friends, for me to say that completely discounts the fact, if I'm thinking about it, that in Him I live and move and have my being. He giveth to all men life and breath and being and all things. If you and I are standing here, it's because He's given us life and breath. If we're able to work, it's because He's given us strength. And if you and I, friends, are able to bring forth fruits unto righteousness, it's because He has made us to differ from another. And everything we have been given it, and we have received it from the hand of Almighty God. Now that doesn't mean, friends, that He's just going to move us and direct us and pick us up and put us here and place us there. He gives us the strength. He gives us the inclination. He nudges us and impresses us by His Spirit. I've said before, if you think somebody stands here and God just funnels it in from heaven and right out our mouth, I guarantee you, if that was the way it happened, sermons wouldn't sound the way they do. Because if that was the way it happened, friends, I would never stumble. I would never misspeak. I would never get a verse wrong. Brother Bence would never have anything to criticize me for of anything that I preach when I'm up here. Because if God did it that way, it'd be perfect. But Brother Bence will always have a job, and some of the rest of you will always have a job of pointing out my mistakes because I'm a man. But friends, if I have been given the ability to preach and I preach, the praise does not go to men. All that I have received it from God. And when you get it, you have received it from God. And if you have a family, you've received it from God. And if you have blessings, you've received it from God. What you have because God has given it to you. What does James say in James 1 and verse 17? He says, every good gift and every perfect gift cometh down from above, from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. Anything that is worthwhile in this world, it is authored and originated by God. And anything we have that we can claim that is worthwhile, that is worth glorying in, God has given it unto us. Paul says, what hast thou that thou didst not receive? In other words, what do you have? What are you a possessor of that was not really and truly ultimately a gift? Whether it's life, whether it's health, no matter what it is, you received it. It was a gift from God. Now the other question Paul asks is this. He says, now if thou didst receive it, he says, why dost thou glory as if thou hadst not received it? He says, if this is truly the way it is, and I think we can all admit that it is, he said, why would you ever act like this is not the case? Why would you ever glory as if it was really yours and it was really your strength that got it? You remember there was a man back in Daniel chapter 4 who actually did the very thing that he was warned not to do. Man, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. He's the king over Babylon. I thought about this morning when Brother James was preaching, when he was talking about where the word of a king is, there is power, and no man may say unto him, what doest thou? Nebuchadnezzar learns that very lesson in this chapter. Because Nebuchadnezzar at this time, he's the greatest, strongest, most powerful sovereign in all the world. Babylon is at its height. It's at its absolute glory. There's no other kingdom. There's no other empire like it. And this man is full of himself and he has a dream. And in this dream, he sees this great, mighty tree that grows up and stretches up into heaven. It's so great that even it says the birds and the fowls of the heaven lodge in the branches thereof. It gives lots of shade. And he beheld as the tree was cut down. And when it was cut down, a watcher from heaven declared that seven times would pass over it. And there was a band placed around the stump and seven times passed over that tree. And Nebuchadnezzar was troubled. He said, I don't know what this means. He calls Daniel in and Daniel's troubled. And the reason Daniel's troubled is because he doesn't want to tell this man what this dream means. Because if Nebuchadnezzar gets mad at him, he can say, well, Daniel, I don't like what you said. You're going to die. But instead, Nebuchadnezzar hears what Daniel says. And Daniel says, the dream and the interpretation be to thine enemies, O king. He says, this is you that God is talking about. That thou hast exalted thyself and you're going to be cut down. And seven times or 7 years are going to pass over you as your stump is in the earth. And it says, all this came upon Nebuchadnezzar. Now, you know, we have a tendency to say, well, if I was in so-and-so's shoes, I wouldn't have done that. If I was in so-and-so's place, that wouldn't have happened to me. I've heard so many people say, if I'd been in the Garden of Eden, I wouldn't have eaten. If I'd have been in the wilderness, I wouldn't have doubted. I've heard all these things. Have you said these things? I have. But friends, Nebuchadnezzar is told, this is what's going to happen to you. And what does Daniel say? He says, King, let me give you some advice. He says, go to God in prayer. Ask Him for mercy. And it may be He'll lengthen thy tranquility. You know, all of us have done far enough in the past that God would be just in withholding any future blessings for the rest of our lives. I want you to think about it. How many sins have you already committed from your birth until now? Is it hundreds? Is it thousands? Is it millions? I mean, let's be honest. How many idle thoughts have you had? How many foolish things have gone through your mind and through your heart? And for these thousands upon thousands of prior sins, would God be just in saying, you know what? I gave you strength. I gave you ability. You didn't use it. But I guess I'm just done with you. Here's the end point. I'm cutting you off. I'm thankful God doesn't do it that way. I'm thankful God doesn't act that way. Thankful God is long-suffering. Now, friends, He's not ever suffering, but He is long-suffering. And Daniel knows this. And he says, King, even though God has pronounced this, He might be merciful. He might be gracious. You pray and ask Him for mercy. He might lengthen the days of thy tranquility. Your peace may continue. Your good situation may continue. Let me pause for a moment. This isn't really the point of all this. I'm getting to it. But the point, a side note I'd like to make is, how many of you, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, I'll raise mine because this applies to me. How many of you have in your heart, in your spirit, or maybe even in your speech, said this country is too far gone, there's no way, it's headed towards the cliff, and even if we hit the brake, even if we swerve, we're going off the cliff, we can't stop it. I have had that thought many times, and friends, we may go off the cliff. We may crash, and this country may never be what we've always enjoyed it to be. But friends, by saying that, what I'm saying is God is not able to bless at this moment in time. God is not able to intervene and change the course and direction of things and the way they're going. Daniel understands that if Nebuchadnezzar gets on his knees and prays to God, even though things look so dire, even though things look so dreary, he says, God may lengthen the days of thy tranquility. And I tell you, if we get down upon our knees and pray, God may lengthen the days of our tranquility. He may extend our peace that we have in this country. He may extend the peace that we have in our churches. I've heard the people crying about the death of the church for 30-something years now. I mean, you know, it's amazing if people today could see what the churches were like 30 years ago. And friends, 30 years ago, by and large, there were more people in churches than there are now. And they were talking about the funeral of churches 30 years ago. I don't often do this, but I'm going to tell you a story of an article I read in Casey's editorials. It's about volume 2 or 3. It's about a preaching trip he goes on. He lives first in Tennessee and then eventually in Arkansas. He goes on a preaching trip by train all the way up through the Midwest. He goes through Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, and places like that. And he swings back down. He's gone for, I think, 35 days. And in 35 days, preaches 55 times in about 27 different places. And friends, that boggles my mind that a man could go that long, go that far, and go that hard for that extended of time. And when he gets back, every time he'd make a preaching trip, he'd write an article in the paper sort of telling everybody about the state of the churches in different places. And this is in about 1917, 1918, 1919, somewhere in there. He says this. He says, and truly, there has been a great languishing in Zion. For many of these places that we had visited in years past were not what they once were. They were not attended like they had in years gone by. And truly, some of the saddest sights is to see Zion languishing. He said, of all the places that we visited, we experienced crowds as low as a little over 100. I want you to think about that perspective. A man travels across 27 churches for 35 days, preaches 55 times, and the lowest attendance that he saw was a little over 100, and he talks about the languishing of Zion. Now, Brother Casey was not talking about the church passing away. He was just talking about things being on a spiritual decline. And certainly, I'm not going to stand here and tell you things haven't been on a spiritual decline. But friends, that's no reason to say it's over. That's no reason to say there's no point in all this. There's no reason to say that all hope is lost, because if God is still on His throne, there is still hope to be found in us, in our lives, in our churches, in our families, in the very world in which we live. So Nebuchadnezzar's given this advice. He's told, this is going to happen to you, but do this, and it may not come to pass. If it does, it may be a long time coming. You say, well, if I'd been told that, I wouldn't have done it. Friends, I've been told many things, and I've still done them. I mean, I've been told by my parents, if you do this, this is going to happen. I did it, and this happened. Then what happened? I did it again, and it happened again. You know, I get tickled when I hear people say, well, I didn't really need to spank my children much. My parents beat the tar out of us, and we needed it. And I thank God I had parents like I had. You know why? Because if they'd have let up a little bit, you don't want to know what I'd have turned out like. I mean, I was hard-headed.
I mean, they'd say, if you do this, you're going to have this happen to you. And I'd do it. And I thought, well, I wonder if they're really serious. And so I'd do it again. And it happened again. I actually, maybe this one shouldn't go on the internet. I don't know. I actually got spanked all afternoon. Actually, it's okay. Dad's passed away. They can't get him for this. Dad spanked me all afternoon. Mom said I got spanked from the front page of the paper all the way to the classifieds. I mean, she was on her bed on Sunday afternoon and that went through the entire paper. You say, boy, you had a mean father. No, you're looking at a hard-headed, stubborn person. I was about 5 years old and they were trying to teach me how to say please and thank you. And I refused. And finally, Dad had had enough of it and he said, you're going to get a spanking until you say please and thank you. I could have ended this at any time. It took 4 hours for me to finally say please and thank you. You say, was your dad's arm that weak? No, my will was just that strong. But he broke it that day. And friends, I tell you, that's what man is like in his condition. He's stubborn. He's sinful. He can be told, if you do this, this is going to happen to you. And he does it anyway. 12 months later, Nebuchadnezzar's walking through his kingdom. He's walking through his palace. He says, is not this great Babylon which I have built, which I have created? And the message comes down from heaven, and all this came upon Nebuchadnezzar. What had he not done? That which he had received, he acted like he hadn't received it. That which he was given, he acted like he built all by himself. That which God had blessed him with, he wasn't thankful for, but he was lifted up in pride. And 7 years, this man, who was the greatest man in the, naturally speaking, in the earth at this time, he was driven out from men. He ate grass like a cow. He had claws on his hands like a bird. He had feathers on his back like an eagle. And 7 years this man lived, driven out from men, made a gazing stock where people beheld their king and how he lived. But at the end of those 7 years, what happened to that man? That man's reason returned unto him, and he blessed the Most High. He honored God for what God already was, what God still is. And friends, no matter whether you and I honor Him or not, He is always going to be what He is. That never changes. But our lives are a whole lot better off if we honor Him in reality for how it really is. Here's what Nebuchadnezzar says. He says, my reason, my understanding returned unto me, and I bless the Most High. And here's what he said. He said, all the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing before Him. Friends, what are you and I? Compared to God, we're nothing. And less than nothing. We're nothing more than the dust of this earth. But here's what he says. But he doeth his will and worketh his counsel among the army of heaven and the inhabitants of men. And none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? Can any of us charge God with folly? No. Can any of us charge God with unrighteousness? No. Can any of us, friends, tell Him, you haven't got it right? No, we can't. But friends, every one of us, when we have our right understanding and our right reason, we can bless Him for being so merciful to us and favorable according to His good pleasure and according to His good will. If you've received it, why do you glory as if you hadn't received it? You say, preacher, are we guilty of this? Every one of us are. On a daily basis, every one of us think from time to time and in our actions that we're doing things for ourselves. We're doing things on our own. You know how I know that? Because if you're like me, maybe I shouldn't say you're like that. I'll say I suspect you're like this, because if you're like me, and if this applies to you, then yes, we all do this. If you're like me, there are things that happen in this earth. There are events that happen on a daily basis. And I live from the beginning to the end of that experience and realize through it all, I never once prayed to Him while I was in that experience. Is that your case? How many times you hopped in the car, turned the ignition, off you went. Then you got to where you're going and it dawned on you, I didn't pray before I started. I didn't pray all the way through, and if I'm not careful, I won't thank Him for getting here safely. That's just one brief, basic example. Friends, how many times have we come to the house of God without praying, just expecting God's going to be with us? How many times have we gone out expecting that certain things are going to happen and not saying, if the Lord will, this is going to happen or that's going to happen? You've all heard the story about the neighbor who's sitting on his porch and the man walks down the road with a cow behind him and he says, hey neighbor, where are you going? He says, I'm going to town. He says, what are you going to do? He says, well, I'm going to go to town. He says, I'm going to sell this cow, I'm going to make a profit, and I'm going to get home before supper time. He says, "Don't you mean Lord willing?" He said, "Lord willing, my eye, I'm going to town. I'm going to sell this cow. I'm going to make a profit. I'm going to get home by supper time." Well, later in the afternoon, the neighbor's sitting there. His neighbor comes staggering down the road. His clothes are all torn. His eyes are black. He's bleeding. He says, "Neighbor, what happened to you?" He said, "Well, several hours ago, about halfway to town, some thieves jumped me. They beat me up. They left me dead. They stole my cow, but I'm going to get home by supper time, Lord willing." You know, God will teach us to say, "Lord willing," if we're stubborn. He'll teach us to thank Him for things that we received if we glory like we haven't received them. Nebuchadnezzar understood, again, that though he was sovereign, there was one who has more power than he does. And I don't care how much power and authority a man has, I don't care how great he is in this world, God is always greater, God is always more sovereign, and God always has more power and authority. And this man, what does he say about it? He says, "My glory and my majesty were returned unto me." This man who for 7 years looked like a beast of the field, he had his kingdom. He had his kingship. He looked like he did before, but now he had the look and the understanding of who was above him. Now notice how that leads into this next verse. And I'm going to try to be very brief. I know we're all very tired. Verse 8, the Apostle Paul says, "Now ye are full. Now ye are rich. Ye have reigned as kings without us. And I would to God ye did reign, that we also might reign with you." Now this is a verse, if we don't properly put everything in its place, we're going to get confused as to what he's talking about. Paul says, "You're rich. You're full." And what he's talking about is them in a natural way. Corinth was a very rich city. It was a very prosperous place. And yet, as you read the Corinthian letters, you find out that even though they were rich, even though they were very prosperous, this is going to be tough, I know, preachers aren't supposed to talk about this, but it's the end of the annual meeting, you're probably tired, and I might get away with it. As far as the churches that Paul went to, they gave him the least as far as money is concerned, as far as helping him out. You know, Philippi was a place that helped him out a lot, and they were smaller, a lot smaller, and a whole lot less prosperous than Corinth was. And Paul's basically saying, "You're lifted up naturally. You're rich. You're full. You've reigned as kings without us." In other words, you're living high on the hog. You're living very well. We're not, but you're still doing so because your natural position has not changed. You're still going out, engaging in the world, enjoying the spoils of the world. He says, "We're not, but you are." Now, what does Paul say? He says, "But we would to God that you did reign as kings with us." Now, is Paul saying by this, and you can go and read the rest of this passage and realize very quickly that he's not, just take my word for it for now, he's not. Is Paul saying, "If you'll just give us half of what you got, if you'll just give us 10% of what you got, if you'll just give us this much, we'll all reign together"? Is that what he's saying? No, that's not what he's saying. Now, friends, he's going to go on and charge them with their duty in this regard in the 9th chapter, but he's not talking about that here. What Paul is actually telling them is, "You're so far over here in the world, reigning as kings, living high on the hog, that whenever you and I actually do meet together, you're not getting the full blessing of everything you could get." You know, there is a sense in which, in this place, people have to put self off on the shelf. People have to put their ego and check it at the door. Now, I realize we can't completely divorce our spirit from our body. We can't divorce our personality from the things that we do. I heard Elder Guy Hutt say one time, when the Lord calls a man to preach, he doesn't assassinate his personality. And friends, no two men are ever going to preach alike. I mean, you saw that this weekend. I mean, Brother Will and Brother James, they don't preach alike. I know I don't preach like either one of them. But friends, our personality does come forth. But in a sense, we've got to put ourselves on the shelf and check our ego, because it doesn't matter right here who's rich and who's poor. It doesn't matter who's old and who's young. It doesn't matter who's wise and unwise in this world. You realize in the house of God, a poor dirt farmer is the same as a PhD educated scholar. Doesn't matter. Someone who has very little, naturally speaking, and lives in a shack is no different than a multimillionaire who lives in a mansion. Doesn't make any difference in the house of God. And the reason it doesn't make any difference is because here we're all kindred in Christ and brothers and sisters united by the faith that we have in the gospel. And because of that, we can reign together as kings and priests unto God. But to reign as kings and priests unto God, we have to understand that this is higher than anything out there. You know, what I have here is higher than any bank account I could have. What I have here is better than any position I could have in this world. I know people who aspire to be athletes, people who aspire to be entertainers, people who aspire to be presidents or kings or whatever the case may be. I tell you, friends, being a member of the house of God is a higher power, a higher office, a higher authority than any place or position you could have in this world. And I do not apologize for that. That's not pride. That's not boasting. It's because I'm admitting that God has elevated this place above this world and out of the affairs of it. Now, friends, for us to enjoy the blessing that we have in the house of God, for us to reign together, for you and I to reign together as kings and priests unto God, we cannot, friends, become lazy from the fatness and the richness of this old world. We cannot, friends, serve God and man. I don't remember which preacher said it, nor which service it was. It doesn't really matter. But one of them said, if you try to live with one foot here and one foot here, one is always going to win. It's probably not going to be the one you want. You can't serve the world and serve God at the same time. Now, we have to live in the world, but we don't have to live of the world. We don't have to be like the world. We don't have to look like the world. God has made us different. And because He's made us different, we should act different. Because we're children of the King, we should act like children of the King. You know, one of the things that I was very thankful for growing up is that when I grew up, I lived in a godly home. I didn't earn that. I was just favored with it. I grew up going to the house of God. I didn't earn that. I was favored with it. But friends, all the raising that I got, all the teaching that I got, all the grounding that I got, I was capable. And for a time, I'm sure my parents thought I was going to. Because there was a period there where things were very dark. I was capable of taking that which I had learned, that which I had been grounded in, things that had been given to me for years and years and years, throwing it all away and going out and living just like this old world. That is something that people are capable of doing. And if that was to happen, I would still be a child of the King, but I wouldn't look much like a child of the King. I'd still be the son of my parents, but I wouldn't have looked a whole lot like the son of my parents because I didn't look like the way they raised me, and I wasn't acting like the difference that God has made in my life. You know the prodigal son in Luke 15? He was a son all the way through. That never changed. He was his father's son at home. He was his father's son when he left. He was his father's son on the road. He was his father's son in the whorehouse. He was his father's son in the pig pen. He was his father's son on the way home. And he was his father's son when he was received back with much rejoicing. He was his father's son the whole way through. But if you could have seen photographs of him all the way through, he wouldn't have looked the same all the way through. He looked very different. I don't know what he was wearing when he came home, but I can tell you this. It wasn't a robe and a ring because the father said, "Put on my robe. Put on my ring and put it on him and let's have great rejoicing." And I tell you, friends, this world can rob us of how we ought to look. It can rob us of how we ought to be. It can rob us of the blessings that we have. When you and I seek to go forth in life, what is our greatest motivation? What is our greatest goal? You know, I'm at a point in life where I'm thinking about where I want to end up. You say, it's a little late for that, isn't it? No, it's where I want to end up with my family. It's where I want to end up with my children. It's how I want them to be. Because, friends, we're getting to the point where I want them to stand and walk and talk and act like the men and women I hope they're going to be when they're grown. We're getting to that point where I'm looking at these things. We're getting to the point where I'm thinking a lot about these things. And, friends, I tell you, when I think about my children, I read stories like the prodigal son. Fills me with a lot of reason to get on my knees and pray to God that my children don't act like that. That my children don't walk like that. And I think, what is my greatest motivation? What is my goal? What is that that I want? And my goal, what I want for my children, what I want for the churches that I'm in, the churches that I serve, what I want, friends, for all of God's people that I'm close to, is I want us to reign together as kings. I want us to reign and look and act and enjoy the blessing that we truly have as kings and priests unto God. Friends, I submit to you that if God's loved you, you're His child, you'll always be His child, and you're going to live in Him with heaven one day. But I submit to you that if we do not differ manifestly from this old world, if we don't give Him thanks for that which we have received, if we do not, friends, honor Him for the gifts that He's given unto us, we are going to perhaps reign in this world. We'll perhaps be rich and full in this world, but we will not reign together here. You know, when I was during that period in my life when didn't look much like my mother and father's son, when I was not acting like the way they had raised me, during that period, I did not. It's amazing. Of all the things that I lost, of all the things that I was not doing, it's amazing the things that I actually did do. I never once quit going to church. It's amazing. I look back on that and I think, why did I go? I didn't want to. Why was I there? I mean, and I was to the point where they couldn't have made me. I mean, I wasn't in their presence and I wasn't around them a whole lot. But I thought, you know, why did I still do that? Because, friends, I submit to you, for years I went to the house of God and they could have been speaking gibberish. They could have been speaking Chinese. It wouldn't have mattered. I was a million miles away. I was thinking about what I thought about when I drove there. I was thinking about what I was going to do when I left there. I was thinking about all the things I was going to get done. I had no clue what was happening in the house of God. Didn't care. And friends, I submit to you, my body was there. And yeah, my spirit was too. But my mind and all my thoughts and all my affections were somewhere else. I mean, it was amazing. Now, I wasn't reading my Bible during that time. I mean, I was amazed at how quickly dust grows within covers. I mean, it was one of those things when I finally picked it up again, I was like, where'd all this dust come from? And I'm like, has it been that long? I wasn't praying to God like I was supposed to. I wasn't doing any of the things that I was supposed to be doing. But friends, I still came to church. It's amazing. But I submit that though I came, I didn't reign. When I came, I didn't enjoy. When I came, I was not uplifted. When I came, I was not blessed. Because friends, I was seeking the things of this old world. I was full and rich and was not giving God the glory for that which I had, that which I have received. But when I finally had my understanding returned unto me, when I finally blessed the Most High, and thankfully, I wasn't living like a beast out in the field. I don't remember getting on any boats at that time, so no whales swallowed me. As Brother James said, if you're being rebellious, don't get on a boat. The closest I ever got to be on a boat was on a river or, for your sake, a pond. But friends, I mean, I look back when my reason returned unto me. And you know what the amazing thing was? The church was just like she was before. The message was just like it was before. The glory of it was just like it was before. And I'm sure when the prodigal son came home, I'm sure his father's house looked about like it did when he left. I'm sure there were a lot of familiar faces. I'm sure his brother, though his brother was mad at him, I'm sure his brother was about the same. But friends, the difference was not the house. The difference was the man who came back. And I found the difference was not in the house. It was not with the people. The difference was me. The difference was with what I saw in it. The message was the same, but it was sweeter. The message had the same power, but it meant something to me. The difference, friends, is they were reigning without me in the house of God, but now I was able to reign with them in the house of God. What is your motivation? What is your inspiration? What is that which you want for the rest of your life? What's your goal? Friends, our goal ought to be, to the very best of our ability, until we reign with Him there, that we reign with Him here. And if we can reign with Him here, we will feel the power of His glory and the power of His blessings until that day that we receive the fullness of the redemption when you and I go home. One of the things that I also thought about, I can't remember if it was last night or the night before, when Brother James was talking about the earnest of our inheritance. And this is it, friends. You got the earnest of your inheritance this weekend. You got a taste of what heaven is going to be like. You got a portion of the goodness that's going to be given to you in heaven. And one day you're going to receive the fullness of it. But when I think about the times that you and I have in the house of God and the opportunities that we have to meet with Him and for Him to lift us up and to bless us, it amazes me. It absolutely amazes me. I'm not going to speak for you, I'll speak for me. That sometimes I just don't look forward to it as much as I should. Can you say that? Sometimes you just don't look forward to it as much as you should. Now, I think it's obvious we are all looking forward to this weekend. I know I was. And I think there were a lot of prayers that went into it. But have you ever found yourself thinking, I guess it's time to get ready to go to church? Why is that?
Friends, with the we've already talked about the thousands of sins we've committed in the past. How many blessings to this point in your life have you received in the house of God? Is it hundreds? Is it thousands? Is it millions? I tell you, friends, with all the untold numbers of blessings that we've received in the house of God, why am I not running to get here every time I can? Why am I not anxious every time I can? I'll tell you why. Because, friends, sometimes I don't know things as I ought to know. I think I've gathered them of myself when I really haven't. I put my faith in my own strength. I put my confidence in myself. But going forward, my confidence needs to be in Him who's given me strength. My faith needs to be in Him who's possessed me. And when I reign, it doesn't need to be with this world. It needs to be with the people of God, in His house, in His kingdom, His mountain, and His place. And when we have those blessings, when we have those experiences, it ought to motivate us and inspire us to make this our focal point for the rest of our life. What does David say? I'll close here. David says in Psalm 27, in about verse 4, he says, "One thing have I desired from the Lord, and that I will seek after, to behold the beauty of His presence in His house." Friends, what I want to follow after is beholding the beauty of the Lord, inquiring after His countenance, dwelling in His house all the days of my life. Dwelling with Him and the people of God all the days of my life. Do you believe that though this meeting is over, and it is, it'll be over in another 40 seconds and I'll be done preaching. Even though this meeting is over, do you believe that God is done meeting with His people here on earth? I don't. Do you believe, friends, that God is going to keep coming down by His Spirit and meeting with His people? I do. And if I do, I want to be there the next time He comes down. I want to be there the next time we meet together and we're lifted up out of this world. I want to be there when I can say, surely, the Lord has been in this place and we have reigned as kings with Him. That's my desire. That will I seek after. And may God bless us in the days to come to inquire in His temple after the beauty of His countenance. May the Lord should bless you, is my prayer.